Hey guys, thanks for joining us. Tap Cancer Out is going on tour this fall, bringing our tournament series to 8 cities in 8 weeks, including Raleigh on September 21st, followed by Atlanta, Orlando, Austin, Chicago, Cincinnati, Nashville, and Philly. Registration is open for all of these, so please join us. Just head to grapplingforgood.org or tapcancerout.org to get all the info. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at tapcancerout and this podcast at Rolling for a Reason Podcast. If you want to pick up any of our gear, you can grab gis, rash guards, hoodies, tees, hats, patches, and more at store.tapcancerout.org, or just head to our website and click store in the upper right. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoy the podcast. Please leave a rating, review, or comment to let us know what you think. Welcome to the Rolling for a Reason podcast. I'm your host, John Thomas, and I am joined, as always, by my lovely co-host and fellow shaved head guy, Dave Bannon.
Thought that was going to be the new thing.
Did you?
Yeah. You were...
Well, because I looked at you and thought about it 2 seconds before we started the podcast.
You know, it's more aerodynamic.
It's freeing, right?
Yeah,
So after decades of just buzzing my head, last year I decided to grow it out, and I like the way, you know, it eventually came to be, and I like the way it looked, but it was just way too much maintenance. You know, when it was like out of the shower and dry, my hair was all over the place.
Yeah, you're always fussing with it.
Yeah, I'm always messing with it. When I, like, even when I go do the elliptical, I have to like think about what I'm gonna wear on my head so that my hair doesn't get in my eyes. And I'm like borrowing my wife's headbands and like, you know, gym headbands and stuff. It's not good. When it was done, I liked it, but everything else I hated about it. So like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I went back to the buzz, and then lo and behold, Dave has joined the Buzz crew.
Yeah, no more bedhead. I'm a fan.
But it would only take you like 3 weeks to grow it back to where you had it.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
It's been getting progressively shorter. I used to have like the long flow.
You did?
Yeah.
How long?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. 6 inches.
He's putting his hand. He's opening his hand. Like, that's helpful. What? Okay, but not like flowy in the back or.
Back in like high school, it was.
You see, you take me as a guy who would have very. Although I've seen your younger pictures, your Eli Manning looking senior year picture, but it looked like you'd have like a big curly fro. You didn't have.
It was very wavy.
Okay.
Gets along, it gets all.
I have no waves. It just goes straight, which is why it's not fun to have for me to have long hair.
Yeah, same with me.
But anyways, this has turned into a hair podcast, so.
Yeah, that's enough.
We're going to talk to somebody with very cool hair, so you should look up her hair. But the Rolling for a Reason podcast shines a light on the individuals in BJJ, MMA, and beyond that are making the world a better place. And we are excited. I'm especially excited to be joined in our 14th episode by Zayana Hansen, founder of Barbells for Boobs, CrossFit coach, super mom, and a whole lot more. I'm going to let her give herself a proper introduction. And is it okay if I refer to you as Z? That's how I've always ever.
You can totally. And you did such a fantastic job pronouncing my name.
Okay, good. Okay. I had to do some research ahead of time to see how other people pronounced it. But
I, you know, people normally ask me how to say my name, and I'm like, I don't know. How would you say it? Like, I love hearing everybody's interpretation of my name. So I always tell people, you're right. That's one way we could say it. I don't get angry at it. I'm like, that's a cool way. I might start saying that now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I say Z so much that it makes me want to say Zayana, but if you're looking at the whole name, it should be Zayana. That's how it looks.
So it is Zayana, but... Okay, yeah, it could be Ziona. I've gotten Ziona. That's a pretty common way of saying it. But thanks for having me this morning. This is absolutely a pleasure, and I'm excited to share any knowledge that I have. As you said, I'm the founder of Barbells for Boobs. We provide resources after breast cancer diagnosis, and our vision is to redefine the standard of care in breast health and improve the quality of life post-diagnosis. And we truly believe that fitness is the solution to that. And we are currently entering into our 10 years of service. Special year for me because I just stepped down as the CEO of the organization, and kind of you know, I'm in this place where I'm still part of the organization. I'm still the founder and the compass, but exploring a different path and not having to make those executive calls every single day. So it's been a really exciting year for me and my family. So I'm excited to share and help others grow and answer any questions that might be daunting people that want to get into the practice of nonprofit.
So before we get too into that, we like to get to know our guests a little bit. What your life was like before Barbells for Boobs. You know, go back 10, 15, 20 years. When did you get into CrossFit and all that?
I mean, do you really want to know?
Yes.
I mean, there's some. It's so funny because I have such a, I'll call it a colorful life. My husband's always like, one day I want you to like make a timeline of everything that you've done because I get so confused on when you did what and where you were living and what you were doing. I've kind of been a jack of all trades. I was a massage therapist. I actually am still a practicing massage therapist. Right out of high school, that's what I did. I had this desire to heal people. It was always my passion was fixing people. And so I started in massage school. I went to JC College for like a year. And I was like, this is for the birds. This is crazy. and, you know, I didn't have parents that were helping me pay for it. So I knew that I had to find some type of job where I could go to school and still make a decent amount of money to support myself. So I went to massage school up in Seattle and probably one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. And I remember walking in the doors when I was 19 years old and I was like, this is my retirement plan. Like, I'm going to end up on the beach somewhere when I'm an old lady massaging people and I will always be able to make a living. I will always have this skill. And, you know, I'm going, you know, 21 years later, I am still practicing massage and I love it. So I was a massage therapist. I had my own practice for about 12 years. I was a pharmacy tech. I really wanted to be a pharmacist. I wanted to mirror how we heal the body from touch and then medicine and really understand it from both angles. And then the pharmaceutical industry just kind of got a little bit too corrupt for me. It was like, what was so fascinating about the pharmacy side of my life was it was really like this small business, you know, pharmacies back in the day were like these small entrepreneurs.
Sure.
They just ran their own little pharmacies, their local pharmacies. And it was kind of like, that's where everybody went before they saw their doctor was they went to our local pharmacy. And I was very fortunate enough to get a job at like 13, taking the trash out and delivering drugs. Totally appropriate.
Yes.
And I kind of just, you know, I got to spend some time in the pharmacy side and I cultivated those two things for a really long time. And obviously on the side, like bartending and stripping, totally cool. okay, I won't say I was a stripper. I was a go-go dancer. Two totally different things. I never took my clothes off.
Absolutely.
but we can talk about that. That's how I originally funded Barbells for Boobs. So we'll get to that. And then I found CrossFit in 2007. And again, when you think about healing people, like I was automatically drawn to it. And, you know, within 2 years, I opened up my own affiliate. Again, I still kept my massage practice. But became a coach, opened up an affiliate. And then within 2 years of doing that, my best friend was diagnosed with breast cancer. So there's a kind of a short, long version of what I was doing beforehand.
I think it's important to tell because I'm sure a lot of people have this perception that like, well, I didn't major in nonprofit management or something in college, or I didn't even go to college, or like all of our origin stories, you know, for anybody who I've spoken to who have founded nonprofits, like nobody ever thought they would. And they certainly didn't invest any, you know, time in education or otherwise trying to figure out, you know, trying to put themselves on that path. It's always something that you just sort of find yourself facing. And, you know, I literally remember the moment where I was like, man, I can't believe how unhelpful I am to the betterment of this world. And I'm kind of sick of it. And I'm going to do something. I don't know what, but I'm going to do something to make this world a better place. And I certainly had no freaking idea how to run a nonprofit, what it meant, what even the word nonprofit meant, what 501c3 meant, how you got, like, I knew nothing. And I just decided to, like, start running with it. And I want people to, so I love these origin stories because I want people to realize that, like, nobody ever really expects or knows what they're doing. They just sort of start and figure it out along the way.
100%. And I think that for me, what I always knew was I always wanted to heal people. And I always knew that I wanted to help people. And I always knew that I had a feeling in my heart that I had a really big purpose here. And I knew that I was going to find it. Sometimes you just have to listen to the universe. And when something kind of comes to you, whether it's an idea or an opportunity, I just don't think that people are listening enough, you know? And so if you just stop and listen and be okay to let go of whatever you think you're supposed to do and take a chance on something that sounds so off the chart and off the wall on what you thought you were going to do. Like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that Barbells for Boobs was going to be this global movement that has raised $17 million to date, like, I would have told you were nuts. Like, one of my goals. I went and did this workshop like the year that I started Barbells for Boobs in 2009. And I found this, like, I had to set a 90-day goal. And the workshop, I want to say, was like in July or August. It was in the summertime. And so my 90-day goal was to get 300 CrossFit gyms to put on a Barbells for Boobs event by October. And then I had to lay out like the things that were going to hold me back from that. And it was like, my things that were going to hold me back was like, well, I run a gym. Like, I would have to, like, basically leave my gym and give up my gym.
Yeah.
And then my second thing was like, if I leave my gym and it's not successful, like, I lose everything. And then the other one was like, I don't have enough time. Like, how am I going to get 300 gyms to participate in this October? And what's crazy about it, to go back and find that document, was I did that. I gave up my gym, which I never thought that was I thought the gym was supposed to, that was my past, you know? And I gave up my fiance, my relationship, because he didn't agree with anything that I was doing. Or not that he didn't agree, he just didn't put it as a priority as I did.
Yeah.
And so I left my relationship. I pretty much just gave up everything because I felt so strongly about this. And I think that was the transition for me, was letting go of my current life and being okay with that and starting a brand new one.
Yeah. And you also don't have to, like, when you come up with the idea, it doesn't mean that, like, within 90 days you have to give up everything you know about your life and, like, do it.
I'm kind of aggressive.
Right. Very much so. Because I was in advertising and I thought I would do that for my entire life, and I loved it. And I loved, like, the agency. I actually went through two different agencies during the time where I was starting Tap Cancer Out. It was like 8 years. Like, I spent literally 8 years hosting Tap Cancer Out events on the side, using vacation days, renting U-Haul trucks, you know, and doing a whole weekend driving somewhere, hosting an event, and then coming right back on Monday, and nobody at the agency even knew what I had done or what had happened or how much, you know, impact we had just made. And I was back there on Monday getting told what to do. And
there was a rat race.
Yeah, exactly. But I was, you know, I was like, well, I have a wife and two kids, and I'm not just going to take this leap and hope that the net appears. I mean, there is somewhat of a leap doing these events. I mean, the events might have failed, but I mean, they didn't, but they could have. And so I did take that leap of faith, but I didn't, like, put in my life or livelihood on the line. And I waited many, many years until we got to a point where I could say, okay, this is definitely a viable business model, and I know exactly how much revenue we have if I add 5 more events, and that will be enough to sustain a salary. And then if we do X amount of events the following year, I can add someone to the team, and then I could start, like, seeing a roadmap. Then it was a 6-month departure from my agency, like moving, going to sort of a part-time role. And then, so, like, nothing was ever abrupt. And I feel like a lot of people are afraid because they think everything has to be this abrupt change, this leap of faith, and where, you know, their life could fall apart if it doesn't work.
Well, I think that, I guess for me, I don't know if it's a character flaw or like I'm such an action driven person where I think of something and then I just go. I think that that's a lot of the reason why Barbell Strippers has been successful is I just do. And I also think that that's why a lot of times we've failed. Mm-hmm. You know,
which is okay.
Which is okay, yes. You know, and you know, now that I'm, you know, 10 years later, I'm going into my 40s, I do get to approach life with a little bit more, I still have that grit and that just go, you know, mindset, but I do take a little bit more time to make decisions now. Like that's probably one thing that has evolved and changed for me is before is like, okay, I'm leaving everything and I'm going to give it all. Like even me retiring as the CEO and resigning as the CEO was like, I literally woke up in the morning one morning and wrote my resignation letter. Mm-hmm. It had been on my mind for years, but it was just something where I woke up and I was like, my resting heart rate every day was like in the 80s. And I was like, I'm not meant to be making these critical decisions. Like I need to stay. And I don't know if you know this, but I lost my sister to breast cancer, mm-hmm. in April of last year. And so I think that it clouded my ability to make clear decisions. And I knew at the end of the day that Barbell Strippers deserved better, if that makes any sense. And since then, now my husband is kind of taken over and overseeing the organization, which has been really incredible to watch him step up and continue the work we were doing, and kind of give me a break. And so I've taken about 3 months off and now I'm like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. What do you need? What can I help with? Let's go.
And I don't think that, and losing my sister was like my first real, I've definitely have lost friends and people in my life, but it was my first really close death. And I'm finally in a place of like acceptance. And so for that first year, you know, like you're struggling and, you know, a lot of people don't talk about death and a lot of people don't, accept it and really deal with it. And I did, and I like went right back to work and I was like, I'm fine. Let's keep helping survivors and let's keep talking about breast cancer. I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like once I got through an October season where every weekend I had to share that story and every weekend I had to kind of think about her, you know, she took her last breath in my arms and, thinking about that, it was just, it was really hard for me to keep the momentum going. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen, especially when you're starting these, passionate causes. They usually come out of turmoil. They usually come out of some big event that has happened in your life and just making sure that you build an organization where it's sound enough, where if you need a break, you can take it and come back and continue to be the visionary and the leader.
What is this break you're talking about? I don't know anything about this.
I've taken a break. I kind of had this idea set in my head. Again, this very abrupt, like action-driven person. I had this idea that, you know, after 10 years, I'm going to be useless to Barbell Strippers and I should probably move on with my life. And I felt like that was like this proper service to Barbell Strippers was, hey, after 10 years, I don't know if you know this, but like Starbucks like demands employees at 10 years to take a coffee break. And that's where I kind of started getting that idea of, okay, in 10 years, like even if I took a year off, like I want to be able to come back and be better for Barbell Strippers. That I really just needed a break from the day-to-day. And you understand it from a CEO position, like you're overseeing. I had 21 people that I was managing. I had my board of directors of about nine board of directors overseeing strategy, growth, fundraising, developing new programs, being the voice, you know, being on podcasts, traveling all over the world. And, you know, I was averaging 30 to 35 trips a year. And my son has special needs. And I just got to a place of, I was exhausted and I'm okay being exhausted. But then I started getting tired, you know, like I'm okay like working hard and I'm a hard worker, but I got to a place where I was like tired and resentful. And I was like, this isn't a good place to be. And so I think that it's really important as you know, if we're talking to passion driven people that want to start nonprofits, like protect yourself from that fatigue and wanting to get out of it. And so I did that. not knowing, not having a plan either. I didn't like have this great plan of I'm leaving and here's kind of a laid out 5-year succession plan. Like I didn't have any of that. I was just like, I need a break. And I kept saying that. And I kept telling the people that I thought were the right people in the organization. And nobody really set me up to take a break. And again, I think that that's all my own, you know, my own fault. Looking back at it now is you completely have control over that, right? Like you put the players in the place and you need to put stuff together where, hey, like I didn't even have it set up where I could take a week off work.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's where like now if I could go back, I'd be like, oh, like maybe set it up a little bit better where you're not like completely attached at the hip and you feel like it's going to fail if you're not there every day.
So to give our audience a little more background on Barbells, when did everything change for you and the idea of the organization come about?
Yeah, so 2009, I found CrossFit in 2007. I was living in New Jersey at the time in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Whoop, whoop. Gotta look weird. I love Jersey. I think 2007, nobody knew what CrossFit was. I happened to stumble across it. My partner at the time was an amateur boxer and he found it in a boxing magazine. And he's like, oh, you know, there's this article. It says like, so you think you're fit, try this. And it was CrossFit.com. And so we did it, loved it, and finally found a gym that we belonged to in Jersey. And we wanted to open up our own. I was from Long Beach, California. His family lived in Fountain Valley. So we moved across the country, and we opened up a gym in Lake Forest, California. And about a year into building it, my best friend sent me an email, and she told me that she was diagnosed with breast cancer 10 days prior. And I was... number one, super shocked because I was 29 years old and she was 26. And I just didn't think that that happened at that age. Like yep. I was one of the naive people that thought that breast cancer happens when you're 40 and over. And so in complete shock, you know, kind of feeling helpless and not knowing how to help her because really cancer is an uncontrollable disease. And you can only control on what you can focus on what you can control, which I couldn't really control a lot, you know? And so I went to visit her and I was like, hey, I'm going to have my gym. And really my gym kind of rallied and was like, let's do something. So we had got together and we did a workout, a CrossFit workout called Grace, which is 30 clean and jerks for time. And we all met in a parking lot and about 60 people came out from 3 different CrossFit gyms. And we raised $2,000. We all did Grace. And the next week I saw Greg Glassman, the founder of CrossFit, and I told him what I was doing. And he's like, that's awesome. Like CrossFit's going to match it. So I had $4,000 and I went to go give it to my friend and she told me to help others with it. And so a very important piece to this is after the parking lot fundraiser, we went to a bar and one of my friends said, we just did barbells for boobs. And I was like, we did. Can I use that? So that's the origin story of barbells for boobs. And you know, not knowing, I think the biggest part and the biggest piece of advice that I can give anybody starting a nonprofit is, know what you're going to do with the money before you raise it.
Right.
So I raised money with the intention to help my friend. She gave me this huge obligation to help others, bless her soul. Mm-hmm. And then I went out and I went out with this vision to help women. And I started doing some research on what was happening with women under 40 and, no state covers at that time covered a woman under 40 with a lump to get a screening. And, you know, a young woman that needs a breast screening, they're probably going to need a biopsy and ultrasound, which are really expensive procedures. You probably don't have insurance if you're young. And so it was really me trying to figure out how do I help women get access to screening was, you know, the original concept. And then we went into that October season and we raised $300,000. So by the end of that, I was like, cool, I have $300,000. Like, now what do I do? So it's one thing to fundraise the money. And I think that that's a huge piece to nonprofits is the fundraising side. But the other really critical piece that I geek out on more now is how do you use it? And how do you efficiently use it? And how do you really get the most impact for your dollars? And I didn't know. And then So I'm building that out. And then the next year it's like we raised 600,000. And then the next year it was 1.2. So we had this like 100% growth mm-hmm. rate for the first 4 years. And it was insane. Like our last, you know, our most successful year, I want to say it was in 2014, and we raised like $2.6 million. And I'm kind of bummed that we grew so fast. Like it bums me out now because it was, we lived so long in this reactive state instead of a very proactive way. I wish I would have known more of how to utilize the funds right. for, you know, better and more influential impact. I do now, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we just did a, you know, a company-wide layoff, and we're really shifting to a volunteer infrastructure for our organization. And it's been really enlightening and really just driving the focus on charitable work and helping others. And so, that's kind of where we're at. That's the starts and kind of the evolution.
Yeah. That's incredible growth. One of the great similarities between our causes and why I'm always trying to learn so much from barbells is that motivation to help through a passion point. And I think that's something that is sort of lacking in this world, unless you like to run marathons or something. There never seems to be any shortage of opportunities to like join a fundraising team that is running a marathon, and you see all of the bibs for all the different organizations in those. And that's actually how I got started doing fundraising on behalf of cancer organizations. Specifically, my wife and I did the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Our nephew had leukemia, and he passed away at 8 months old. And so we ran on his behalf. We fundraised on his behalf, but we're not runners. It was not fun. Like training was friggin' brutal. I never actually ran a half marathon until the day I ran the half marathon. Like I ran 10 miles once. And then I was like, it's good enough. You know, hopefully the music at every mile and the people cheering will, you know, keep me going. Yeah. And my wife, like the first time we ran, the first time we started training, I'll never forget, 1.3 miles is what she ran. And it was really difficult for her. And then, but you know, by the end, she ran a whole marathon and it was or half marathon and it was awesome. But, you know, it was when we finished, we weren't like, oh, I can't wait till we do this again next year. It was like, okay, that hurdle is like we climbed that mountain. Now what? And so we were never interested in doing it again. And so once, you know, Tap Cancer Out came about and it was this way to use something I was actually passionate about to create impact and also do the same for others, you know, give these people within jiu-jitsu a way to fundraise and feel like they're changing the world, because they actually are, but by doing something they actually care about that they'll want to do year over year. I don't necessarily, this isn't a question, but I wanted to just, you know, chat with you about it, because just having that, something that people are so passionate about, I think, you know, is such an incredible motivator. And, you know, you almost want to see organizations within like everything that people are passionate about, video games and, you know, swimming. And I mean, there are a lot of swimming ones, but like everything, because it just, it allows people to help. And that's one of the most difficult things, is figuring out how to help when you feel so helpless. Especially when it comes to cancer.
I think that when you can find your passion and then connect it with something that's your purpose, and like it's almost like this perfect storm. Like I became very passionate about fitness and picking up a barbell. You know, as a woman growing up with, you know, I'm one of 10. I have seven sisters. Well, you know, six living sisters and two brothers. And you know, I always kind of hung with the boys, but I was never encouraged to pick up a barbell or to be strong. In college, I did eventually go to college, and I was a dance major, and you know, so performance was always performance and movement and the way the body functioned was always something I was really passionate about and loved. And I feel like the minute I picked up a barbell, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been missing my whole life. Like, and it wasn't until I was 27 did I ever pick up a barbell. Like, that was the first time I picked up a barbell. And then like 2 years later, my friend gets breast cancer. And my friend Ceci that was diagnosed, she's just not my typical friend. Like, she's like a soul sister to me.
Ride or
like,
die.
It was all ride or die. Like, this woman literally should not be my friend. You know, for all the crap I put her through, like, literally should not be my friend, and has loved me unconditionally. She actually is the person in my life that taught me what unconditional love is, how to really accept people for who they are, meet them where they're at in their life, and just embrace them and love them and show them that unconditional love and support. Like, this woman, like, we were roommates and she kicked me out. She was just like, we can't be roommates. You know, but I love you, but like, you can't bring homeless people into our house. You know? And I'm like, why not? Like, I don't understand. She's like, I love you. And for her, she's like, I'm so thankful that you got to find a way to help people. And it's like this beautiful, like, kind of thing for me. It's like, like this message and this movement that's helping thousands of women right now, like, it had to come from my friend's suffering and her pain. And so, like, almost look at her as a prophet. I don't want to get like all like philosophy, like get all crazy, but like, I look at her as like, she came to me with a message and I was the one that had to kind of deliver it for her. Because I don't think if there's anybody else, like my sister, 2 years ago was diagnosed. I don't know if that would have moved me to build a movement, you know, like it was, I think it was because it was Ceci is why I was so passionate. You know, I was very passionate about her not even passionate about her, but like, she gave me so much purpose as a person. Like, she set so much fundamental, like, values for me as a friend that I had so much purpose with her that I was like, okay, I'm gonna, like, this is a message from some bigger source, you know, for me to do something. And then when my sister got diagnosed, it was like, okay, like, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. And then I got really discouraged and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, once she passed away, I was like, I don't want to be the face of breast cancer. Like, I'm not supposed to do this. And since then, since my stepping down as a CEO, like, there's constant messages that are constantly reminding me that it is my purpose. I did find it. I need to get back in the driver's seat. Like, yesterday I sat down with a gentleman that does photography for us and his mom was diagnosed. And so it just keeps like, it just keeps coming back into my life as a constant reminder of the work that I was, my purpose, like why I'm even here. And so not a lot of people get that in life, you know, or not a lot of people will listen to those messages. And I've just spent a lot of time and just kind of being like, okay, again, accepting, like, I didn't think I was supposed to keep doing this, but maybe I have another 10 years of me, you know, I don't know.
I'm sure you have many, many years ahead of you. So I wanted to talk about something that's sort of maybe weedsy, maybe special saucy, but you're talking about purpose. And while there's like a ton of similarities between Tap Cancer Out and barbells, one of the interesting dichotomies is that we have built our sort of business model on something that isn't necessarily sustainable in terms of like rapid growth, but we are event based in that we host our own events. So this year we'll have 13 tournaments and we'll have four other events called showcases. They're like evening events, you know, people sit at a table, maybe eat, drink, watch, you know, fights, whereas the amateur tournaments are like an all-day thing. It's just hectic, 12 rings, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, so 16-17 events. Next year it'll be 30. But one of the things that we've always wanted to empower others to do is to host their own events on our behalf. We call them grapplethons. And actually, our last episode, we had one of our grapplethon hosts on here to talk about his experience. But those are like very few and far between. And that first event is that you had in the parking lot is the only event you ever hosted, right? And then after that, it was all of these gyms stepping up and hosting events on your behalf. And you guys, you know, were just helping fuel those and give them direction and you know, help organize them, but, you know, help them along their way. So it's interesting how, like, we want to figure out how to do that. And then I'm I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are interested in hosting a Grapplethon, right, Dave?
Yep.
Tens of people are interested. So just to hear your perspective on how, you guys got to numbers like that are completely like there's no way you could ever talk to even like half or I don't know. Like you had hundreds of events going on a year, and or maybe you guys did speak to every single host. I don't know.
Well, I can say that last year I know we had just over 700 events across the world, which is pretty incredible. And I think that the vehicle of us, you know, in our relationship and our commitment to CrossFit has really helped that growth. You know, I don't want to take full credit for that. That's definitely the support of the community and the support of the resources of CrossFit. But at the end of the day, I think that where we came, honestly, it was us. We took a huge risk in trying that model. It was a really, really big risk for us. So 2009 obviously was the parking lot where it was like, hey, bring a dollar, you know, like, yeah. I don't care. Just do whatever we can. 2010 and 2011, we did a registration model. It was still a virtual, like put your own event on, but you know, register on our website, pay $35 and get a t-shirt. And we were really fortunate that year because CrossFit had signed a contract, a deal with Reebok. And so they added us to that deal. They were like, hey, can you help our buddy Z out and get her, you know, send her like 5,000 shirts. And so the next thing I know, I have 5,000 shirts in my apartment and my roommate's like, what is this? And I'm like, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm.
My wife shares her pain. Trust me.
This is going to be awesome. And at that time, I did go back to go-go dancing to try to fund all the t-shirts for this concept. And that's how I was originally going to pay for it. So,
hey, whatever works.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was working for me, at all costs, right. Left everything, had nothing, went back to bartending. I was just doing whatever I could to, support the startup cost of the organization. And so those first 2 years, we had rapid success. And you know, we had like the first year was like 5,000 participants. The second year was 8,000 participants. So if you look at that and you say, okay, we have 5,000, I looked at it eventually as like, we have 5,000 t-shirts we have to ship.
Like, yes.
Oh my gosh. And then the next year was like, we have 8,000 t-shirts we have to ship. So after we did all that and we shipped everything, there wasn't a lot of money left. Like it wasn't a very smart model. It was like, okay, and again, it was just me. So I was like hand shipping everything. So it wasn't even an efficient way of shipping and I didn't know what I was doing. And so I finally brought on my husband at the time. He wasn't my husband at the time, but I really needed somebody to help me streamline a lot of the processes and the operational side. And so he was like, hey, let's, and I got sick and tired. I thought that Barbell Strabibes was turning into like an apparel company. Like people were, we had more emails about where's my shirt than like mm-hmm. anything doing yes, with breast
I
cancer.
I totally feel you.
And I'm like, okay, it's coming. Like I promise. And, just made a lot of errors and a lot of F ups, you know? And so we started brainstorming my husband and I, and another woman that was helping us. And we were like, I was like, I want people to earn this. And so we started calculating how much it was really costing us to provide like a service in breast cancer. And it was about $80 at the time. And I was like, I want people to fundraise $80. And so Chris, my husband, started, investigating like peer-to-peer, software. There wasn't many at the time and we found Classy. And I think that's how you and I originally connected. I was through Classy. And so we, you know, I don't even think Classy was the first one we used. We used another really bad one in the beginning. but to go from hey, asking somebody for $35 and then going to ask them for $80 within a year, was a huge risk. Like we knew like we could fall on our faces here. Like we could totally fail on this process. But in the end, what ended up happening, the end result was we got our participation cut in half. So we had 4,000 people earn their t-shirts, but that meant half the cost on the operational side. And we doubled our dollars. So we went from, you know, we raised $600,000 the last year we did a registration process. We switched it to, you had to fundraise. There was no registration. Mm-hmm. You know, like you need to create your own page, create your own team. Here's a reward from Reebok and a thank you from Reebok. Then we went to 1.2 million and we had, again, like only 4,000 people raise the $80. And there were some hiccups in that process. We didn't have a lot of people that were like, F you guys, F you Barbells for Boobs, I don't want to give you $80. Sure. So it was received really, really well. It was a really, I think, a critical time in CrossFit itself. Like CrossFit was growing. CrossFit was like starting to get ESPN coverage from the games. And it was a really pinnacle time just in the industry period. So I think it was a smart process, a progress for us as well, an evolution for us. And we haven't turned our backs from that ever since that day. Like it was like, okay, like we're all in. You know, me, like my like action oriented self is like, no, like we're just going to switch it. We're going to change it. People don't like it. I don't care. Like we're here to serve people and we're not a t-shirt company. And we changed and we've, you know, we had two more years of doubling our fundraising dollars. And so, it's been a sustainable model for us. I will say that our name helps.
Yeah.
For some reason, like people get excited. I mean, people are just like, oh my God, our Barbells for Boobs event. Like that's our, you know, it's a tradition at our gym. And also I think that, you know, at the end of the day, 1 in 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer. So you get a room full of people together, you get a gym that has 200 people in it and people are connected to the cause. And I think that they're looking like what, like we talked about, like people don't want to do a marathon that are CrossFitters. They want to pick up a barbell. And so a lot of people have been impacted by breast cancer, by this pink, and for them to connect it with something that they're passionate about and a community that they love. I mean, I think that's where the sparks are for us is, giving people that vehicle that a passion and purpose.
So one question I like to ask all our guests is, what's one thing you wish you knew about starting a cause-based organization before you started it?
Ooh.
Like one piece of advice, yeah. One major learning point.
Oh my gosh. There's so many of them. You know what? I think that, you know, I could look back at all my mistakes, but I'm really grateful for all of them. So I don't think I would change anything. I think that, you know, I think that with every failure, there's that lesson in every single time we fail. So I think if I could go back to that time, mm-hmm. Honestly, more confidence. Like I think that I doubted myself a lot. And I think that I consulted with others and trusted others before I trusted myself. And I think that we all have a really good intuition. Like we're all born with intuition. Go with it. Like listen to your intuition before you take anybody else's advice. This is your baby. Yep. This is, you know, this is your vision. The gift from the world has been given to you. You are the best advocate. You are the best voice. You are going to have the biggest vision. Don't let anybody ever, ever take that away from you. So I say like, come at it with the confidence as in this is your purpose. You can build a team that will help you get you there, but you are the one out there swimming towards that island and nobody else is going to swim with the sharks but you. So, you know, trust in yourself. That's it.
I love it. And that's really powerful. We hear that a lot. Not that it's this, I'm not saying it's a super common answer, but a lot of these tips revolve around that confidence. And like, you know, even for me, if I could talk to myself 8 years ago, I'd be like, you can do this. Like, you can definitely do this. I know it feels like you can't. And that's probably one of the reasons I strung it along for 7-8 years before I actually took the leap. Like I never really trusted in myself. And then it's like, no, you can do this. And, so that's Z, thank you so much. This is definitely a conversation I've been wanting to have for a really long time. And you're definitely one of my mentors and someone I look up to and try to learn from a lot. So it's been an honor having you on here. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed this, as well. Where can they follow you and keep up with
Thank you so much for those kind words. Those, like that means everything. Cause again, like I think that when we're running our cause, our head's in the ground and we're just kind of making it work as much as best we can. Like it humbles me to know that people are watching us and learning from us. So thank you for that. You can find me, I'm more on Instagram. So just, Zionna, Z-I-O-N-N-A is my Instagram handle. You can also follow Barbells for Boobs. And it's spelled F-O-R. There's no number four in the middle. Barbells for Boobs. If you're in the Midwest, it is there. The S's belong there. So it is not Barbell for Boob. you can also email me z@zionna.org or z@barbellsforboobs.org. I love answering questions, especially if you're just getting in and starting a nonprofit. First piece of advice, don't do it. No, don't do it. But really, if you are going to start, I'll end with this. Like, if you are going to start a nonprofit, make sure that nobody else is doing it. And if somebody else is doing it, go learn from them.
Yes.
And again, trust in yourself. And that's it. And I really appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to share and be a voice in this world of nonprofits.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Yes. And congrats on all your success and all your leaps and bounds and jumping off cliffs.
Thank
and
you.
Flying, which is it's an incredible
just
thing
trying to figure it out along the way.
No, I'm so proud of you. I remember talking to you a few years ago and you're like, what am I doing?
Yes. 100%. Yeah. It's been a wild journey, but it's cool where I can't even believe like we're sitting in our office now. If you asked me, you know, 6 months ago, if we would have an office this year, I'd be like, no, no way. Like all of these things just sort of happen. And, it's cool, but looking forward to the future, but thank you.
One foot in the other.
Exactly. Yep. That's what we're doing. All right. Well, thank you, Z.
Have a fantastic weekend.
Yes, you too.